Welcome to Minding Your Business, business prosperity coaching for today. Each week, certified master success coach and New Thought leader, Magic Ravenhawk, brings you success secrets that have been utilized for centuries across the globe. Whether your business involves manifesting prosperity, reinventing yourself, spontaneous evolution, soul leadership, or running a business, she brings you thought-provoking information through her many interesting guests. Now here's your host, Magic Ravenhawk.
Good morning and welcome to Minding Your Business, presented by Ravenhawk Talk Radio, where each Monday morning we're here to help you achieve your greatest potential and find your authentic self. This morning I have Derek Riedel with me, author of The Law of Emergence for a Second Appearance. I'll tell you a little bit about Derek. After a life-changing brush with death, he considered becoming a monk, then cloistered himself in his apartment without TV or news and meditated for several years, emerging to become a licensed integrative therapist and best-selling author. He's trained top executives at Fortune 500 companies in relationship and communication skills. He's coached hundreds of writers, artists, and media professionals on how to create a more conscious content. He's ghostwritten several books and over 20 screenplays, worked under the close mentorship of Michael Beckwith from The Secret for 15 years, and taught thousands of people across the planet how to live a more passionate, prosperous, and purposeful life. His latest work, The Law of Emergence, takes you beyond self-improvement to access your true potential and your higher purpose. Welcome back to the show, Derek.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Great. You know, the first time we had you on, we just did not have enough time to get through a lot of these things about discussion with the law of emergence. And I know that we had a few emails that came in afterwards to my site. So let's just jump right into it.
Sure.
Okay. One of them was talking about, and we touched on this before, that you talk about one of the conditions for emergence being the need to stop struggling and striving, that we don't have to earn, we don't have to achieve, or even be worthy of our good. Now, I had one person email me that says that view, it kind of feels this laziness and taking the easy way out. She wanted to know, are you saying that we don't have to put effort into our daily lives? Can we just stay in bed all day and everything will fall into place?
Yeah, and that's a great question. Mm-hmm. And no, unless, you know, that brings you great inspiration and joy to lay in bed all day, I would say probably not what you should be doing. What the distinction is that I use the analogy of a farmer, in that when a farmer or a gardener or whatever, when they plant a seed in the soil, there's certainly work involved in cultivating the soil, planting the seed, tending to the soil, watering it, feeding it, nourishing it, keeping the weeds out of the soil, etc. There's work involved. But it's not effortful. It's not a struggle in the sense that they're trying to get that seed to grow. Because they know if they align themselves with the principles of the soil or the law of emergence in the soil and in the seed, when the conditions are right, that which the seed already is in potential will emerge, will grow. And the same is true with us. Just as that, I use the acorn, you know, often as the analogy. The acorn doesn't have to struggle and strive to become an oak. It doesn't have to go out and attract oak parts to it. It doesn't have to even be worthy. It can certainly not achieve oakhood. And so likewise, the seed that's of potential that's planted in the soil of our soul, it's already complete. It already brings with it everything that it needs for its fulfillment. And our work is not to try to make it happen any more than we would try to make the seed grow in the soil and dig it up and pull it out of the seed and all those things. But our work is merely to cultivate the right conditions for that already is there to begin to emerge. And when we do that, we move from living a life of struggle and strife to a life more by grace. And that's where we literally watch as things unfold, and they do feel effortless. and we feel more like we're being used as an instrument rather than trying to make something happen. So we're inspired to compelling right action. So we definitely take action. And as a matter of fact, when you really activate the law of emergence in your life and become congruent with that vision in your heart, that seed in your soul, you are moved into oftentimes more activity and more productivity and more prolificness than ever before. But it's not a struggle anymore.
It just feels like a natural part of you.
Exactly. Because it is. It is a natural part of you. It's who you really are. Another analogy I use, and this may not quite work as well, but I might have talked about this last time, but the example of Michelangelo and the sculpture of David, and that he talked about how he saw the completed masterpiece already in the block of marble, and he just chipped away everything that wasn't it. So there was certainly work involved. He had to chip away everything that wasn't this vision that he already saw completed there. But he wasn't struggling to try to create this masterpiece that was already there. His work was taking away everything that was obscuring it or covering it up. And incidentally, Michelangelo believed, had a philosophy, that his work as an artist was not about creating anything, but about tapping into those perfect forms that were already existing in heaven and then downloading them, which is sort of a Platonic philosophy. Plato also believed in that. He called them the perfect forms. And that the work was just becoming aware of these perfect forms and then bringing them forth. One other interesting thing is the word human comes from a Sanskrit term that means the dispenser of divine gifts. And so we're more of a dispenser of these divine gifts and these divine ideas rather than having to go out and struggle to make them happen.
Okay. And what you're really saying is returning to our authenticness. I mean, who we truly were in the beginning. I don't know.
Exactly.
Looking at what you say and what you're talking about in the law of emergence, to me is like we are perfect, but we've kind of got all this junk on us that has either been put on there by ourselves or by what we've been taught or the media, everything else that we see around us. We've got everything piled on us. Now,
That's really important, Magic. And there's a great story. You know, what happens is that we're born into this world and we're born under a belief that we are separate from God or from ultimate good and that there is a power of good and a power of evil. And these are false beliefs. But as a reaction to those beliefs, what happens is we create all these defense mechanisms and coping mechanisms and literally put on all of these layers of defensiveness in coping to try to manage our way through this dangerous, scary world in our mind and what the cultural values are. And so all that junk you're talking about is primarily all these false identities and false concepts that are covering up this radiant, whole, perfect self. And I love that analogy because there's a story of, I think it was Tibetan monks. It was during a time, a great siege, and there was... And they had all these golden Buddhas, and they were being destroyed and melted down and sold for gold and all this stuff. And years later, after the siege, there was a monastery that had survived. And one night, and there was this big, giant clay Buddha that always sat outside, you know, big, you know, kind of dirt clay Buddha. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And after a heavy rainstorm, the monk noticed a glint in the moonlight, a glint of light coming off of this clay Buddha. And he went out there, and he looked at it and chipped away at it and discovered that, lo and behold, this wasn't a clay Buddha at all. It was a golden Buddha that had been covered up by layers of dirt and clay to make people think it was just a clay Buddha. But it was really one of these golden, priceless golden Buddhas all along that had been covered up to protect it. And so that's very much what happens with us. We've been covered up by all of these defense mechanisms and reactions to the beliefs of the world. But underneath that is this golden Buddha, this radiant self.
So do you say that we're being covered up to protect us or self-protection? And how do you see that really being a self-protection when it actually gets in our way?
Well, of course. Well, here's the ultimate truth is the vast majority of our coping mechanisms, defense mechanisms, and self-preservation mechanisms do get in our way. But from the standpoint, ultimately all of them get in our way. But from the standpoint of a belief that the world is a dangerous and scary place and that we're separate from God or separate from our source and that there's the power of good and evil, from those beliefs, which appear very real because our what we believe becomes a law in our life, becomes experience. Mm-hmm. So we experience our beliefs. We're not meeting the world as it is. We're meeting the world as we are. We're not experiencing reality. We're seeing through a glass darkly, as it says in Scripture. So we are experiencing our filters, our concepts, our beliefs about the world, and then we're reacting not to the real world, but reacting to our thoughts and beliefs and concepts about the world, and then forming these defense mechanisms and coping mechanisms to seemingly protect this self that we believe is in danger. And the great irony is that self that we think is in danger, that's separate from God or good, doesn't exist. It's a fiction. And so we create, therefore, this whole personality construct to preserve this false self. And that's also why it says in the Christian scriptures as well as the Buddhist texts talk about the same way, that we must die daily. And it's really talking about the death of this false self or this personal sense of a self apart from the all good or from God or from universal intelligence, which is what we really are. And so we think we're doing a good thing when we use all these defense mechanisms, but what we're really doing is we're reacting to our limited beliefs about who we are and what life is.
In some case, you can actually turn it into more than what it is. If you continuously believe that the world is such a bad place, and then you start sequestering yourself that you don't want to go out in it because everything is evil and something might happen, then you become a prisoner of your own place, of your own house, exactly. Including exactly. Of your own mind as well.
Exactly. In the mind, when they say, a lot of times in the Bible, it talks about like, that your your house says the enemy is in your own household, and they mean literally in your own mind, in your own consciousness. Mm-hmm. And you do it because a lie believed acts as a law until it's neutralized. So we create the parameters of our reality through our perception, and then we live in that reality we've created, and we think it's what's real. And it's really it has nothing to do with reality. It's just the reality we've constructed. It's a virtual reality.
It's a reality for that particular person.
Exactly.
Now, you know, in some of your writings, you talk about how all of this is like a divine production, that we're acting out a part in a play that we co-created for the evolution of our soul, and that every experience we've ever had has been conspiring for our good. Now, I did have a reaction to that. I had people calling. I had people emailing.
That's always
me,
a controversial one. That's always a controversial one.
Because they talk, what about, you know, rapes and murders and all of this? How can that be conspiring for our own good? Not only the person that commits it, but also the what we term as a victim on the other side.
And there's so much to this topic. It's actually the subject of another book I'm developing called Your Divine Drama. And I go back, first of all, to a scriptural story with the story of Joseph, because a lot of people are familiar with Joseph and the many-colored coat. And he had a vision of his life, and then he was, you know, sold into slavery by his brothers, and then he was framed for having an affair with the woman of the house when he the master of the house, and then he was sent to prison. And at every step of the way, he was just abused and mistreated and misunderstood and cast out, but he kept bringing his attention back to the vision God had given him, back to a vision of his life, a higher vision, no matter what condition he was in. And every time he did that, he grew and he learned and he rose up in ranks, and eventually, through a series of events that he never could have outlined, he became the Pharaoh's right-hand man. In other words, the second most powerful man in the world. And at one point, his brothers came up to him, thinking they were kneeling before the Pharaoh's right-hand man, and only discover it was their brother Joseph. They were like, oh my God, we're in trouble. Please don't kill us. And Joseph instantly forgave them because he said to them, man may have meant it for evil, but God... God meant it for good. And there's a metaphysical saying that behind every human aberration is a spiritual aspiration trying to emerge. Now, why this is true, first of all, is that if you understand the premise that there, and even in quantum physics now, we're discovering there isn't many different lives and many different powers. There's one omnipresent field. They call it the quantum field. And in spiritual texts, we call it the one life of God or the universal intelligence that is omnipotent, all-powerful, omniscient, all-knowing or all-mind, and omnipresent, meaning everywhere present. Two or more, two things cannot occupy the same space. So when you understand that God is infinite and omnipresent, whatever, not an anthropomorphic God, but this presence, this love, this light, that means there really isn't anything but it. Now, because it's infinite, it's unfolding forever. And so there has to be a mechanism by which we choose to unfold different dimensions and aspects of ourselves. And if you understand a great the way stories are written, I come from the theater and from the entertainment industry, a great story is filled with conflict and obstacles and enemies and allies, not to victimize and destroy the protagonist, but to ultimately help them become a hero, to pull out of them their latent talents, gifts, abilities, so that by the end of the story, they are more than they were before, and they have been able to deliver a gift to the world and take the world to a new level. That's dramatic structure. And I believe our lives work exactly the same way, that on a soul level, we craft these divine dramas. As Shakespeare said, all the world is a stage, and men and women are but players upon it. And we craft them, and we get involved with other souls to play these different roles so that we can all evolve, so that we can access these different talents, gifts, and abilities, because in this human dimension, that's one of the most powerful ways to do it.
Now, so what that about...
Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, well, I was going to ask, so what about the people that haven't come to this realization and they have all this trauma in their life? How do you assist or facilitate for them to reach this point, to realize this and not be totally living their trauma for the rest of their life?
Absolutely. Well, before I say that, I want to say one other thing, because I'm not in any way saying, you know, I'm condoning behaviors and the actions that are violent and all that. Mm-hmm. And what I want people to understand is that everybody is always only reacting to their beliefs. As I was describing before, you're not reacting to the world, you're reacting to your beliefs about the world. And in that sense, we're all victims of this universal hypnotism that is constantly operating upon us. And so we all know what it's like when we've been in the grip of a belief and we've acted out and done something and then only later realize that it wasn't true or that we have a moment of enlightenment and realize, you know, something different. But in that moment when we believed it, we didn't have a choice, because as far as we knew, it was true. And that's happening to all of us at different degrees. And even the person that does a violent act, all they're really doing is reacting to their distorted and aberrated beliefs that are part of the cultural consciousness. Again, it doesn't condone it, but it's important to understand it to be able to come to a place of forgiveness and to help them become free, as well as to forgive and help ourselves become free. Now, in that context, in looking at our own story, what we can begin to do is look at the story of our life and these events where we've apparently been victimized and traumatized and abused and betrayed and all of those experiences. And the first thing we can come to realize is that the experience itself has no power over us. The experience itself did not traumatize us. What traumatizes us is our story or our belief that we assign that experience. You know, the meaning, nothing means anything. You know, but thinking makes it so. Nothing is either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. I believe that was Shakespeare again.
Mm-hmm.
So the situation itself, believe it or not, is neutral. But the meaning we assign it is what determines our experience of it. And so we can either be identified with the character we're playing and believe that the play we're in is real and therefore the meaning will be, I was victimized, I was traumatized, I was abused. Or we can step up and come from the perspective of the divine author and recognize we crafted this to awaken in some way, to be a more empowered, more conscious, more enlightened, stronger, more creative individual, and ask, for what purpose did we create this experience? You know, what quality are we trying to allow to emerge in us? And then we have the point of view of the divine author as opposed to the character. And we can begin to discover that that experience happened so that we could learn more compassion, so that we could discover that we're more than our body, so that we could discover and be a place of greater forgiveness. You know, there was a woman, Ilana Bagiza or something, I think she was in Darfur, I believe, and she was in, you know, locked in a bathroom for several days while they were killing everybody in her family and her friends in the town. And she survived that, and the meaning she assigned it was such a meaning of grace that she went on to become so empowered and ultimately so successful as a leader and a visionary and a spiritual teacher. Now, other people in those circumstances assigned it a very different meaning and went on feeling abused. And so you know that people have the same experiences all the time, and it's the meaning that we assign it that determines our experience of it, always, 100%.
Now, you did say this was one of those discussions that really gets people thinking, because the other email I got after that last time was, well, what about the children? What about the children that are abducted, abused, and then killed, murdered? Then how does that play into this, that we co-create it when they're children?
Yes, of course, that's... Mm-hmm. The what about the children question is always one that comes up, and there's a couple ways to look at this. The first thing is again, whatever we feel inspired to do to create a world that is safer for children or for anyone is the right thing to do. We are being moved to create a level of consciousness and healing, and understanding what I'm saying, that we're all victims of our thinking and beliefs, is a powerful thing to know, to be, again, to help others heal their thinking and beliefs so they don't become the perpetrators of these kinds of events. So there's different levels to look at. So that's the first level. The other level is to understand that these that we call children, while they're in the body of a child, this is not necessarily the beginning of their life. That if you understand that life is eternal and that life is continually unfolding, then you begin to discover that you didn't come here as a blank slate. You know, you came here with an agenda, with a program. And, we could get into a whole other conversation about how psychics and mediums, all these people have tapped into some of these children that have been victims of various things and discovered that, in fact, in many of these cases, these children were like enlightened beings who had a particular mission. And what was most important to them was how they were impacting the people around them by being the victims of, you know, early death or disease, and that what they discovered was that the people who were affected by it, these became opportunities to open their heart, to help them grow, to help them become leaders in an area like Mothers Against Drunk Driving, and began making positive transformation in a very huge way because of what happened, or sometimes in a very personal way, and that these children were really more advanced souls that were providing this opportunity to them. So, again, understanding it from the divine drama, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Now, that's tough for us to grasp, you know, because we're often coming from merely our human linear perspective. And if that's the case, then we just operate at that level and we do what we can to heal the consciousness that creates these kinds of events. But understand that these children are not coming in as blank slates, that life does not begin at the birth, nor does it end at the grave. That those are just a parenthesis in eternity, and that they're never unfolding. You know, it's one of their command performances on Earth stage. And when the curtain falls, they get off stage and they go and they regroup and, you know, put on a different costume and get back up for another performance. So it's not the end of the line. So we have to really, you know, step back and begin to look at these souls and their journey, as well as the journey of all those people that are affected by those events and how it helps us to evolve. Usually right. we're the ones that evolve the most.
Okay. Okay, I understand that. That's good. We're going to take a quick break here, and then we'll be back with Derek Riedel, who is the author of The Law of Emergence, and we'll be back in just a few moments.
Holistic therapies for today's lifestyles can be found at MindShift Therapy. If you are looking for mind-body medicine and specialized therapies, this is the place. MindShift Therapy works with individuals as well as hospitals and cancer centers. Their therapists provide the best in complementary and ancient therapies. One size does not fit all. They will give you specialized care and develop a program that fits your needs. They will nurture and care for you, allowing you to be empowered and engaged in your own healing. Contact them through their website at www.mindshifttherapy.com. That's www.mindshifttherapy.com. Holistic therapies for today's lifestyles can be found at mindshifttherapy.com.
In these uncertain times, are your employees stressed out, needing more than a traditional counselor or therapist? Engage Life EAP has the solution for the benefits portion of your business. Engage Life EAP offers outstanding life balance and wellness programs for your employees. They offer culturally based programs along with holistic and ancient therapies. Mind, body, and spirit is the balance we all strive for. The best employers provide their valuable employees with a total holistic approach to their lives. By providing the best benefits package, you can ensure you're employing the cream of the crop. Contact them at www.engagelifeeap.com. The best employee assistance program, engagelifeeap.com.
Now is your chance to be part of the show. Call 877-230-3062. Call in with your questions or thoughts and talk with the host and their guests. Again, that number is 877-230-3062.
And we're back with Derek Riedel, who is the author of The Law of Emergence. One of the things that I wanted to ask you, Derek, was about how we're born into a mistaken identity.
Yes. It's one of the things to talk about, again, when we ask why do these things happen to children and mm-hmm. and all that. Another way to look at it is that because when we're born, the idea of original sin really means sin is an archery term that means to miss the mark. It's a mistake. It's an error. And so we're born into original error or a mistaken identity of who we really are. And we're born into this atmosphere of where thoughts and beliefs and concepts of worry, doubt, fear, lack and limitation, good and evil are floating around everywhere. And we become susceptible to them the same way you would, to a virus. And there's now the new work on what are called the memes, which is like the thought viruses. And so we become susceptible and we can pick up on these thoughts and begin to act them out or live them out. And so it becomes and behooves us as parents and as individuals to, as soon as we become aware that this is so, to begin working in and upon ourselves to consciously think and to begin. If we don't think for ourselves, something else thinks for us. And so we begin to consciously acknowledge what are we believing and begin to reject those thoughts and those beliefs that no longer serve us. And one of those beliefs is the belief that there's an evil power out there that can do something to us. In the Genesis, it says that Adam and Eve ate of the apple, of the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And then it says at one point that a great sleep fell upon Adam. And nowhere does it say that they ever woke up. And so it's important to understand that the idea of good and evil is a belief, that in a universe, which means one song, one mm-hmm. presence, one omnipresence, there is no other power outside of this all-good power. But if we believe that there's a negative power, we begin reacting that way, creating those thoughts, and become susceptible to all the limited thoughts out there, and then that becomes our experience, because, again, we don't experience reality, we experience our beliefs about reality. So it's very important understanding that we're born into this environment, that we begin taking conscious control back of what we decide to think and what we choose to reject. We can do that as parents and literally change the thought atmosphere of our home so that our children become more and more in an atmosphere where they're no longer susceptible. We can literally immunize them from many of these thoughts.
So a lot of the ways that you're saying is, like, I have parents in my practice that say, you know, I don't like to use the fear, but my child just runs out and just, you know, maybe a 2 or 3 year old and just goes out and plays out in the yard when I tell her, no, you need to come in. I've had parents say, you know, I put the fear into them, you know, that they could be taken away, they can be, you know, abducted, and their terrible things can happen to them. And that keeps them from doing that. But that's really not the way to teach them to be cautious or again, their own, then that becomes their reality. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, it certainly can become their reality. I mean, there's certainly, you know, if your child is running towards the street, you know, about to run out in the middle of the street where cars are coming, I'm not suggesting you should, like, turn within and meditate. You know, there's a natural cause and effect response to yell out at them, stop, you know, and to actually give them an experience of cause and effect, of real consequence, so that they catch that in their body and realize and become conscious. You know, one of the ways we become conscious is through the consequences of our actions. Now, you don't want your child to experience the consequence of being hit by a car, but they can experience the consequence of your voice very loudly telling them to stop, and then very strongly telling them, you know, why, and because that does imprint in them an awareness. It wakes up an awareness of their environment. But that's not necessarily because you think life is scary and dangerous. It's just helping them to understand the boundaries of the world that they're living in. You know, and so ultimately, but that's not the way you want to teach them on a daily basis.
Right.
So you want to teach them about cause and effect, and teach them about natural consequences, and teach them about how to be conscious. You know, Jesus said, be wise as serpents and gentle as doves. So it's not about, you know, walking around airy-fairy, doing what's called a spiritual bypass and saying, oh, life is good and all is well. If deep down you don't have that true master consciousness, then that's not going to result in ultimate safety. So you have to be authentic and honest and help them to understand and work with what's really going on. At the same time, you want to instill a larger context of the larger reality of life, the larger truth, that life is safe ultimately, that they are ultimately safe, and they're ultimately taken care of, and then that becomes sort of the baseline of their consciousness. So they're not mutually exclusive. Does that make sense? You can learn to be discerning and to have good judgment without becoming judgmental and fearful.
Okay. Now, what about you? You touched just a little bit earlier about that everything is really, truly in the universe, as you put it, for good. What about those people that believe in polarities, that you cannot, that positive cannot exist without negative, and negative cannot exist without positive?
Well, in the world of duality, in the world of appearances, as this whole perfect idea emerges into this world of interaction and appearances, it does appear as duality. It does appear as male, female, yin, yang, positive, negative, up, down, left, right. And that's so that there can be a creative interaction and synergy. But what we now know from quantum physics is that the old Newtonian model was that there was cause and effect, that there was the billiard ball effect, and it operated upon other objects and caused results. But what we know from quantum physics now is that there really isn't multiple things going on. There's a field of all possibility that's omnipresent. It's one. And then there's conditions, and then there's potential, emergent potential. So it looks like there's cause and effect, and there's different opposites, but there's really only one thing that's emerging. And it, when as it emerges, it appears as it's the one appearing as the many. But there's really only one thing going on. It's like the branches of a tree. You know, there's many different branches going in different directions, but they're all still the one life of the tree. They're not separate. Mm-hmm. You know, and as the Ojibwa saying goes, the branches of a tree are not so foolish as to fight amongst themselves.
That's right. That's
true. You know, but that's a consciousness that we have to come to. It's a unitive consciousness that we wake up to, and we discover that there really isn't. You know, when Jesus said, "You are the light of the world, the light that lighteth up every man and woman that cometh into the world," then what he was trying to point us to is that this light, this life that I am, is the same exact life that you are and that all are. And when you wake up to that, it also is why he said, love your neighbor as yourself, don't mm-hmm. judge lest ye be judged by the same judgment. All of these were clues that there's nobody else out there but me. There's nobody else out there but you. You know, everyone and everything in our life are the personifications and the dimensions of our own infinite consciousness. And, you know, Jesus couldn't put it that way because they wouldn't have any idea what he was talking about. But nowadays we're a little more savvy. So there really is just us going on. And that's
so
why we change.
How long do you think that it's going to take humanity to actually really realize this and come into that awareness? Because the warring and the fighting has been going on, it seems almost like forever.
Yes, it's true. And I would say that there's a saying that the pain pushes until the vision pulls. And so either way, we're going to get there. And also either way, we can be there right now individually. You know, we can only be responsible for our consciousness. So if I'm looking out at the world and I'm seeing the world as a bad and a broken place, here's the thing. And then I go out and try to do all kinds of good deeds to fix it. The problem with that approach is that you don't manifest in your life the results of what you do as much as you manifest the results of what you believe and perceive. So it is done unto you as you believe is the principle. And so if you're seeing the world as broken and you go out and try to fix it, the best you can do really is rearrange deck chairs on the Titanic.
Mm-hmm.
Because your consciousness precedes you. And you'll fix the one thing that's broken, and then something else broken will pop up over here. That's why no matter how many times we've combated an enemy or a disease, a bigger enemy and a bigger disease that's even harder to stop pops up. It's because we're experiencing our consciousness of separation and duality and resistance. That's also why Jesus said, resist not evil. Because all of our resistance to the world and to the appearances is what fuels and perpetuates that experience of war and that experience of conflict. Again, the only enemy is in our own household. It's in our own consciousness. And to the extent that we can heal within us so that we feel nothing but love and compassion, so that when we look out at the world, we see the world of God's creation, the world of universal intelligence creation, which, you know, it says in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, and all that was created out of the Word, and nothing was created except by the Word, and it was named good. In other words, all that really exists is already perfect and whole and complete and divine. Earth, rightly perceived, is heaven. You're not going to die and go somewhere. All that dies when you die is mortal, limited concepts about reality, because that's the only thing in the way of us experiencing heaven right now. Again,
seeing
through a glass darkly. So it's all an inside job. And as we realize that, and as we look out at the world and requalify all of our own perceptions, we'll be moved into right action to do things to begin building a world that works for everyone. But more than anything, our consciousness will begin transmuting and become the leaven that lifts everything up in consciousness. So that's the most important thing.
It's like Gandhi said, be the change you want
exactly.
to see in the world.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. They're all saying it the same thing this way. Exactly right. Mm-hmm. be the change you
want
to see.
Well, you know, people want to know how they can get from where they are to where they want to be in the quickest, easiest way possible. Because society has a need for instant gratification today with all of our technology and so forth. What do you have to say to that?
Yeah, it's called microwave consciousness. You know, we want our dinner in 5 minutes now, you know. And even 5 minutes is too long now. Yeah, it's true. You know, we want it now. Now, the truth, with a capital T, is that we already have it now.
Mm-hmm.
It's already been given to us. We already are the answer. We already are the solution that we're seeking for. That everything we're looking to get out there, we already have in here. And that's the truth. And if we could just accept that and rest in that, you know, there's a saying, infinite patience brings instant results. And so if we could rest in that, we could have instantaneous demonstrations of our wholeness and of our abundance. Barring that, the process with the law of emergence is we have to begin cultivating the inner congruence or mental equivalence to the things we're trying to make happen in our life. And what I mean by that is if we want more abundance in our life and, you know, wealth, success, etc., we have to begin honestly looking at our thoughts, our words, our conversations, and our actions and ask, are those the thoughts, conversations, and actions of an abundant, successful person?
Mm-hmm.
And usually they're not if we're wanting abundance in our life. And we think that, well, of course they're not. How could they be? Because I'm not abundant. I'm not successful yet. So why would I think those kind of thoughts? Why would I have conversations like that? Why would I act like that? And so they're waiting for conditions to change before they decide to become the person that they want to see in the world. But it doesn't work that way. It's like, well, I'll believe it when I see it. No, you'll see it when you believe it. You'll see it when you be it. And so our real work of true spiritual integrity is to say, okay, I want abundance. That's why Jesus said, pray believing that you have, that you may receive. So we need to begin cultivating the soil of our soul to have a having consciousness. Again, it also says, to he who has, more shall be given. To he who has not, even that which he has shall be taken away. Because if you have a consciousness of lack, then that is what gets magnified over and over in your life. So we want to begin cultivating right where we are a welcome environment in our consciousness that is congruent with the things that we're trying to achieve in our life. So begin having, instead of focusing on conversations about how bad the economy is, for example, we decide to no longer take part in those conversations and begin looking for what's good, what's working in the environment, in the economy. What's working? What do we have? You know, what do we have in our house? What do we have in our bank account, even if it's only $1? And begin giving thanks for that and begin having a vision for how we're going to use that. And we begin having conversations about vision and possibility, and we no longer partake in those conversations of lack and limitation, because again it says, where two or three are gathered in agreement, there I am. So we don't want to agree anymore with a life and a world that we don't want to have.
That's true.
We want to know that our... Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, that's true. And I did it just this last year. I had a very large account, and I kept speaking about how much trouble it was and how it was more trouble than it was worth. Okay. And you know
Beautiful.
What happened after that?
Yeah.
Fine. The universe said, hey, too much trouble. Let's get rid of it. Let's go on to something else. So,
right.
But I realized it about 3 days before a decision was made, and I started turning everything around. It didn't come exactly the way we wanted it to be, but it was still with us. And it was one of those realizations that you make in the middle of it.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden you realize that you can turn it around by your thinking and what you speak. And that's what I did for 3 consecutive days, is turn around the way I thought and the way I spoke about it, still retaining it, but still not where I wanted it to be because of the damage I had done before.
Right.
In the way that I was speaking and thinking about it. So it's very, very true. Now, let me ask you very quickly about the difference between vision and visualization. You said that vision is not something in the future, but something that exists right now in the invisible.
Exactly. And we talked about Michelangelo and the seeing the David already completed, and mm-hmm. Plato talks about the perfect forms that are already there, and all that, and that as human beings, from the Sanskrit terms, we are dispensers of divine gifts. Michael Beckwith talks about what he calls the idea sphere. You know, there's the atmosphere, the newest sphere, and he calls the idea sphere, as an idea, an atmosphere of ideas. And it's important to understand that everything, again, to use the scriptural relate, you know, the word, everything was made out of the word and nothing was made without the word, and it was all named good, that this thing we call God or universal intelligence or whatever, it's already done all the work it's going to do. It's not in time or space, so it's not evolving. It's an infinite, omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent isness. It's the ground of all being, and it includes within it infinite ideas of potential, infinite expressions of love and of joy and of peace and of beauty. And we are unique compositions or composites of every spiritual idea that God has ever thought. We are this composite masterpiece that's already fulfilled and completed, but is infinite. So within that, whatever, if it's a job we're trying to express or a project or a relationship or a new home or just our life in general, that idea is already complete. It's already fulfilled, you know, just as the oak is already in the acorn. You know, the acorn doesn't maybe become an oak and sometimes it becomes an apple tree. No, the oak is there already, and the truth is there in its fullness, but it's there spiritually and invisibly, not materially. And so this idea of that is our life, it's already here. It's already fully created and designed and perfected. And visioning, which is a term that life visioning Michael Beckwith coined, and it's a meditative process where you tap into, it's a process that all great leaders and visionaries have used whether they are aware of it or not. When Martin Luther King said, "I have a dream," he was tapping into a vision that already existed. And so it's there already completely. And that's why there's so much power in realizing that it's already there, and that our work is to tap into that vision, to get a glimpse of it, and to begin cultivating these inner congruent conditions, you know, the joy, the peace, the abundance, the confidence, the acceptance, so that the vibration of that vision becomes more real to us than anything in the world of appearances.
And how are people able to tap into that vision?
Well, the one of the most powerful ways is simply beginning to ask the right question. You know, when we have a problem or a crisis in our life, we tend to ask, what's wrong? What did I do? Why me? Instead, we can ask, what is the higher vision of my life that's trying to emerge here? And we can just become still, and we can just, in a meditative place, begin to ask, who and what am I really? What did God create when God created me? Or you know, put any word in there that works for you. You know, what is the highest vision of my life? What is trying to emerge as my life? And we begin asking those questions. And then when problems arise again, we begin saying something to the effect of, okay, more than I want to control this situation, more than I want to change it, I want to wake up to who and what I really am and to what God has really created here. That begins a process of subjectively cutting a new groove. And as we become more interested in realizing who we really are and why we are alive, beyond mere survival, but to tap into that vision of our life, we will begin getting spoken to. Insights, guidance, right action will begin to emerge in us. And we can do it again. We can take, you know, 10, 20, 30 minutes out and just sit and ask those questions. Again, you can look at Michael Beckwith's life visioning work or in the Law of Emergence. In my free e-course at lawofemergence.com, I actually run them through that process. And in my classes as well, I run them through a similar type process. But they can, you know, just start right now asking those questions and begin journaling about it. But then they have to begin being willing to become congruent, making their thoughts, their words, and their actions. They have to start taking actions as if that vision is true, even when it doesn't appear true yet, because they have to start acting from the wholeness, from the vision. And And that's a very powerful thing. You know, you have to be willing to step out on the invisible, and then the invisible becomes visible beneath your feet.
Now, what happens if you're not willing to do that?
Well, if you're not willing to do that, you'll be waiting for the rest of your life for your ship to come in. Because understand that life doesn't happen to you. Life happens through you, through your consciousness. Whatever's missing is what you're not giving. This is all about right identification. And this is the difference between law of attraction and law of emergence. You're not trying to attract something to you. You're trying to become the welcoming conditions for that which you already are to emerge through you. If the oak potential within the acorn just said, no, I'm not letting go of the shell. I'm not. This is my protective shell. This is familiar. This is safe. You know, none of those other acorns are letting go of their shell. You know, why should I let go of mine? You know, if the acorn just kept doing that, you know, it's a dangerous world out there for a shell-less acorn. then what would happen is that oak, ultimately, it would create such a crisis within that acorn that it would either be forced to let go and allow the oak to emerge, or it would die. And that is indeed what happens, is that we experience crises in our lives. I did a talk once called Your Problems Are Your Answered Prayers. And that's because you said, I want to be more this, more loving, more abundant, have a greater relationship. But then you have resisted the inner impulse to let that's trying to express come out of you, you know? And so you have to take action. If you let what's in you come out of you, it will set you free. If you don't let what's in come out of you, it will kill you, either mentally, emotionally, or in some cases, literally. You have to let that imprisoned splendor come out.
It's like evolve or die.
It's exactly right. And so, and understand, this is almost like a warning, but be careful if you start desiring and intending and affirming more for your life, because the minute you do, you activate that potential in you. Instantly, it becomes active, and it starts to emerge. But it's going to now start emerging through those limited concepts and self-images, and that means you're going to have work to do, and that work is going to be surrendering, letting go, chipping away everything that isn't the masterpiece, and really begin to release and act as if and move forward as if you are this. I wrote a song once called Move in the Direction of Your Dreams and Act as If They've Already Come True.
There you go. I have a very quick question, because we only have about 2 minutes left here.
Go for it.
One of them is, I have an email that came in and said there's three people in an office, okay? And one person, nothing bothers them. One person is activating and consciously bringing things to them, and the other person is actually thinking about negativity. Now, in order for this company to survive, that second person that is not consciously creating, not consciously in that space, is that counteracting the person who is consciously creating?
No. You are the only power onto your universe. So here's what will happen. And I remember working as a waiter, and we're using this years and years ago after I was an actor. I did it in reverse. I became a successful actor, then I went and became a waiter. But that's another story.
All right, that's okay.
But anyways, when you begin activating this in your environment, one of two things will happen. Because your environment is a reflection of your consciousness. Mm-hmm. As you truly heal your consciousness and become congruent, your environment will change and expand to be able to hold the larger vision and energy and vibration that you are now emanating, or you will be moved out of that environment into an environment that can hold the higher energy, whether that's a relationship or a job or a town or anything. That's why it says 10 holy men can save a whole city.
So in this person, it was a business owner that asked, that person could then be removed from that situation because of that.
If that business owner creates the environment in consciousness
right.
and then begins to create an external environment conducive to that, that person will either change or they will leave. They will not be able to handle it. They will not be able to stand it. And at some point, the owner might legitimately, you know, invite them to go find their right place.
Okay. No kidding. Okay. Well, that answers that question. And one last thing, and you've got about 30 seconds here to leave us with one imparting thought.
Well, again, the most important thing that I want people to realize is right identification. Realize that you're not at the effect of anything in your environment, of anything in the past, that you right now are God. You right now, all dominion and all power is given unto you. You can, when you change your consciousness and you become tapped into that vision of your life and become congruent within, nothing at all in the world can stop you from manifesting it.
Great. Thank you, Derek. Thank you so much for being here today. It's always a pleasure.
Likewise.
And thank you to Billy, our wonderful producer. Join me every Monday morning from 10 to 11 a.m. Central Standard Time, 8 to 9 a.m. Pacific Time. Feel free to visit us at RavenhawkTalkRadio.com for more information and our guests' archives. Again, this is RavenhawkTalkRadio.com. And until next week, this is Magic Ravenhawk reminding you to mind your business.
You've been listening to Minding Your Business, Prosperity Coaching for Today, presented by Ravenhawk Talk Radio. Join us each Monday morning at 8 o'clock a.m. Pacific Standard Time to explore the many ways you can continue to evolve to the authentic you. Visit us at RavenhawkTalkRadio.com.